Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and today we're coming to you from the University of Sioux Falls Studios. And coming up, we'll talk with a South Dakota native who is a finalist to become the new wild guide for a new version of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, Stephanie Arney. And she's brought along some special friends for us to meet. And if you'd like to see them, today's show is video streaming live. Just go online to sdpb.org/live. But first, during the Battle of Guadalcanal during World War II, the USS South Dakota fought in a battleship duel with the Japanese. 38 crew members were killed, and the Japanese thought they sunk her, but the battleship survived, destroying 64 enemy planes and earning 13 battle stars by the end of the war. After the Navy announced that it was scrapping the battleship, a number of state residents got together to save parts of the USS South Dakota. The memorial was dedicated in Sioux Falls in 1969, and over the past few weeks, it's been getting something of a facelift in preparation for this weekend's annual reunion for crew members and their families. With us to talk about the USS South Dakota and the memorial and the reunion is Karen Dunham. She's a Sioux Falls realtor who's been involved with every USS South Dakota reunion from the beginning. Karen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Also with us is retired Navy Captain Diane Diekman, who's on the board of directors for the USS South Dakota Battleship Memorial in Sioux Falls. She's also the Master of Ceremonies for Saturday's event at the memorial in Sioux Falls. And Captain Diekman, thanks for being here as well.
Good afternoon.
Well, Karen, to begin with, the reunion's been going on since what, 1969?
1969 is when we had the dedication, and then in 1970 would be the first reunion. And every 2 years after that, I think they might have had 1 year where they had a direct without the two-year period, but we've had everyone since then, and I've been at every one of them, and I've been the local registration person, so I'd help meet and greet and do the local footwork that we needed to do here.
So you must have had over the years the opportunity to meet many of the crew members.
I have. I've met a lot of them, and they've become a lot of good friends, and still communicate with some of them. The one that I communicate with the most isn't able to be here this weekend, and he's the one that made the souvenir clock for me out of the teakwood that I showed you and things. So it's nice that we have good relationships and friends, and it's amazing how they have bonded, even though they were gone so many years from each other, that people just meet the first time, they just have that bond from being in the service back then.
And how many crew members of the USS South Dakota are still alive and still able to come to Sioux Falls for their reunions?
According to Kathy, who is the daughter of Larry Mayday, who was on the ship, she is the second generation that keeps track of the newsletter and the website and things. She said she has 345 that are on the newsletter information list, so she's thinking that's about the number. But they are all, I'd say, over 85 to 88. And so they're not able to travel as much as they'd like to and things like this. This year we have 12 of them coming, two of them for the first time, and one of them there has passed away, but his children are coming. And their dad never talked about the ship, what his duty was on there, and they're coming here to find out from the crewmates what they can tell him about him.
Well, Captain Diekman, how unusual is that for World War II veterans to want to talk? It's my understanding that oftentimes many of them didn't want to talk about it, and some, as they've gotten older, have started to talk a little bit.
It takes a long time. Some of them, it takes like 50 years or so before they're willing to talk, and it often takes an event or something that opens the floodgates and they're willing to talk. I interviewed a World War II veteran last year who had been in the Battle of the Bulge, and I was the first person he had ever told his story to. So it varies, but many of them die without ever having said a word about their service.
What was that experience like, talking with a veteran who never talked about the experiences before? You know, I mean, how do you get them to open? I mean, how do you get them to open up for the first time?
Well, sometimes they finally become ready. I think it takes someone that they have to feel this person is interested and cares and truly wants to hear the story and have some kind of empathy, some kind of understanding that whatever they say will be well received.
Does it help that you served as well?
I think so. We talk a lot of the same language. I think that helps.
Well, Karen, going back to 1969, how did the Sioux Falls Memorial get put together here? I mean, what what was it, the ship was being scrapped and some residents decided, hey, we need to save this, parts of it anyway, and have it here in the state?
That's correct. There was a number of local business persons that were involved in that. And I'd say the person that was the lead charge in that was Captain Evans Nord, who was one of the owners of Callow at the time. And he was the one that continued to get the information out to people and raise the funds and went to the governor for the money and stuff like that. And like I said, it was a lot of community support to get it here.
And how much of the original warship is here in Sioux Falls, in 12th and Kiwanis, correct?
Well, she can probably tell you more than I can. I can tell you that the ship is the exact outline of the size mm-hmm. of the ship. I can tell you that we have several gun barrels there. I know we have a lot of the crew members would come back. Like, for instance, 2 years ago, one crew member came back, put his uniform on, and then left it here. But he's not coming back this year.
Yeah, Captain Diekman, how much of the original ship can people see?
The guns and some of the equipment is inside that is on view. There are some parts that are still in storage because they're too big that they don't fit in the memorial. But in general, it's to give you an idea of the size of the ship by having the outline outside. And then inside the memorial are many, many pictures, and like the original silver service that the initial captain was presented with, and various things like that. A lot of the members have brought their memorabilia, and some of that is on display. So it's a lot of little things. It gives you the feel of it, but it's nothing like walking through a ship.
Now, the USS South Dakota, how long was it in service?
It was commissioned in March 1942 at the height of the war and was active for the next several years. And up until the end, it was in Tokyo Bay at the end of the war. And by that time, the ship had, as you'd mentioned, called Battleship X. It was reported sunk, and it kept coming back again. And it was the most decorated battleship. It was also, at the end of the war, Admiral Nimitz had flown in from Hawaii and Guam, where he had been, where he had his headquarters, and he made it his flagship. And then when the surrender came, as we all know, that took place on USS Missouri, which just happened to be the home state of the President of the United States. So the story is that President Truman preferred the Missouri over the South Dakota, so it did not host a surrender. But it was definitely there for those entire 3 years of the war, 3-4 years.
Now, why was it, now after the war, it didn't, it was it out of commission, or what? Is it only, 5-6 years?
It was in 1947 that they took it out of service, and, well, the country didn't have a need for battleships uh-huh. anymore.
Now, one of the interesting parts of the history of the U.S. South Dakota was a notable crew member by the name of Calvin Graham. Now, he was, 12 years old?
Yes. I first heard of him when the movie came on TV in something like 1987 called Too Young the Sailor. And Ricky Schroeder was this adorable young sailor, and watching that movie just tore me up. He was so... He was in the Battle of Guadalcanal, and he got injured. He was a gunner, and he got injured during the battle. And later on, the movie shows him calling his sister and saying, I have my set of orders. I'm so excited about my next set of orders. And he didn't know that he was carrying these sealed orders that said send him to the brig, because they threw him in the brig for underage enlistment. So he spent his 13th birthday in the brig. And I had to get in touch with him after that. And he lived down in Fort Worth, Texas, so we talked on the phone a few times and exchanged letters. And he had struggled all those years to get his medals back. And he'd been in the Marine Corps after that also. And it just took... It took Secretary of the Navy Dalton's involvement to get his medals back and his benefits and such. And then I don't remember what year he died, but it was an amazing story to think of this 12-year-old who joined the Navy, and then the Navy rewarded him by throwing him in the brig.
So how does a 12-year-old get in the military?
By falsifying his mother's name and signing.
Did he look mature for his age?
Apparently. I mean, it was not at all uncommon for, there's even an organization of underage military in all the services. There were quite a few kids 12 to 15 years old who somehow passed themselves off as being older and were combat sailors and soldiers during the war.
Well, Karen Dunham, did you ever meet him?
Yes, we did. He came to at least one of our reunions because they usually held him on the 4th of July, and one 4th of July we were fortunate to shoot fireworks with him and his wife Mary and spend the day with them and things. It was interesting to talk to him because he was, at that time he was still fighting for his benefits and things like that. And it's one of those things that there's a lot of people back in that era, I think, that needed the money for the people at home because his mother was widowed, if I remember correctly, and they had like 7 children. And so there's a lot of young men that needed the income to support their families back home that went into service, like you were talking about, you know, and things like that. So,
well, the stories of Calvin Graham and the others who served on the USS South Dakota, why is it important for us to remember and to know these stories?
We don't want these people to be forgotten. They all serve their country. It's history. History goes on, and it's heartwarming to hear some of the stories of the different people and the contributions that they have made. And it hurts to know when they've been mistreated, and it's great to see when they're rewarded and remembered for what they have done.
Mm-hmm. Well, Karen, what does it mean for you to help with the reunions and to meet these veterans and to hear some of their stories?
Well, the first few years I was wearing my uniform because I was a yeoman second class in the Reserve Center out here for a few years and things. And so being a military person, I've always respected the military. And all of the gentlemen that come back with their families, you know, they brought 17 people sometimes just to be sure that everybody knows that this is what they're about. And it's just been great getting to know all of them, and it's sad that this part is coming to an end because it's been going on for so long, but they're just great people to know.
And for the families, for the children, and I imagine grandchildren, important for them to know what their fathers and grandfathers did?
It is, because a lot of them, you know, they have the second generation, which is the children and grandchildren and that of the servicemen that were on the ship, and so they have a real bonding, I think, too, and they have an interest in knowing what Grandpa did or whatever and stuff. And so it's very rewarding for them to understand what Grandpa was about.
For the veterans that come, how are they very talkative at this point? Mm-hmm. about what happened, about their memories, fond memories, I imagine, despite the danger and that, you know, people were killed, but that still maybe there's a camaraderie and a bond that keeps them together.
Well, they don't talk to me so much about it because mm-hmm. we're more on the casual conversation yeah. side. They go over and talk to their buddies and I'm sure tell the stories of the remember when's type of thing and stuff. But they're very open. They're all very caring. They're all very appreciative. You know, they're just happy to be back here, and they just love to go through the memorial and see what's there and to think that they were part of it.
Well, Captain Diekman, looking at the history of the USS South Dakota, how does it fit in to the history of World War II? You mentioned the most decorated battleship during the war.
It was definitely a force to be reckoned with during the war in the Pacific, and the battles of Guadalcanal and the wresting the Solomon Islands away from the Japanese, and it was. Of course, aircraft carriers were taking over in glamour and success, a battleship could no longer win a war, so it became more of a supporting force, but it was certainly still an important force, and it was right up there in the thick of things until the end of the war.
What I find interesting in reading about the USS South Dakota is how much damage it, you know, how you know, was it kept, you know, how much, what it went through, how much damage it had.
They
to,
are made to absorb
damage. Yeah,
they're
made
damage.
To absorb the damage, and it just kept, because there was time when it had to go back and be repaired and spend some time in the other theater.
Right, it did. It went over to Europe for a while, but most of the time was in the Pacific.
Talking about the reunion this weekend, Karen, what will happen? What can people expect who are interested in attending?
Well, the itinerary, on a quick note, is tonight at 5 o'clock, I'm going out there to start registering the early arrivals, and they will meet and greet as they come in. I'll be out there again tomorrow at 9. And then tomorrow is kind of a casual day for them, but Saturday is their big day. At 10 o'clock, the band concert starts over at the battleship site. And then at 11, we're going to have a program, which Captain Diekman will be the MC for us, and we'll honor those that have passed away since our last reunion, and have some other portions of the program in commemorative of the them coming back here and things like that. And it's just the local people are invited to attend. We usually have a great service out at the battleship there. And one thing about it is it's hopefully a way to get people from Sioux Falls out there, because not everybody has been there, and they should, as long as it's been there and for what it has to offer.
And as I mentioned, in preparation for this weekend's event, Captain Diekman, some work kind of fixing it up a little bit. What's been going on?
Well, for months now, periodically it needs to be repainted and dressed up some. So for months now, Robert Ruff has been running a volunteer effort to do that, and he's had a lot of help from the Yerkes Construction Company and other places around town that have donated materials and time to help refurbish the exterior and make it look sparkly and pretty for this weekend.
Okay, so those efforts still ongoing or done?
They're pretty much finishing up, and then later we'll be tackling the inside. We're planning to have some curating done and put some new displays up on the inside, and we're hoping to have that done for next year to show a new interior, perhaps for 2014.
Well, Captain Diekman, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday. And Karen, thanks for stopping by as well.
You're welcome. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Retired Navy Captain Diane Diekman is on the board of directors for the USS South Dakota Battleship Memorial in Sioux Falls. She's also Master of Ceremonies for this weekend's event. Karen Dunham has been involved with every USS South Dakota reunion of crew members and their families since the beginning. And this year's reunion takes place on Saturday. It begins at 10 o'clock with a band concert there at the memorial site in Sioux Falls. You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. We're broadcasting from the University of Sioux Falls studios, and coming up after a short break, we'll meet Stephanie Arney, who's a finalist to be the new wild guide for a new version of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, and she's brought along some special guests, and you can see them. We're video streaming today's show online at sdpb.org/live.